CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 362, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. The men's basketball team tanked in the West Coast Conference Tournament, while the women shined. What's to blame for BYU's early exit? Poor play or bad format? Also on the show, John Walsh, the forgotten BYU QB, 2020 football recruiting, and spring football news. This is the CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseandShout. And listen to us right now. Well, Matt, for the, fourth time ever, we're in the same place recording the podcast.
I thought it was the second time, so it shows you what I know about podcast history.
I think it's more than that. Not that anyone cares, really.
We did one in New Orleans once.
Yes.
We're doing this one today.
Yes. I feel like we did one other one.
Well, we did like a halftime show at UMass.
That would be three. No, I'm not counting that one. Full on podcast recording.
Listen, I'm barely paying attention when we do these anyway. You could be in the room half the time. I wouldn't even know.
You know what's bad, though, is when I talk over you, you talk over me. Since we're using one mic, I can't fix that. So we got to be careful. Don't talk over me, man.
I was waiting for a visual cue that you were done talking before I began talking.
I'll just do hand motions.
That's really
Look up here.
Look up here.
All right. Well, let's go ahead. And that's not hand motions, by the way. That's vocal cues. But we're terrible at this. So let's start, Matt, with our first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
It's from our brother, Don. That's at DP Mangum on Twitter. He says, how do you feel about Harper to Philadelphia?
It's garbage. That's how I feel about it. It's hot garbage.
Why is it garbage?
What's his problem? What's Harper's deal?
Do you want to pay him that much money?
No.
Okay, so then let Philadelphia waste their money on him.
The Nats offered him pretty close to that much money, except a lot of the money was deferred, which he didn't like, and he wanted this slightly longer term. He's gonna be playing in Philadelphia until he's 65 years old. Who wants to commit that to Philadelphia?
He loves Philadelphia.
No,
he says.
He didn't even want to go to Philadelphia. It was which is why he sat on that offer for weeks. He didn't want to go to Philadelphia.
He was waiting for somebody to match it.
He was waiting for somebody, anybody.
He wanted somebody to match it. Nobody matched it.
He didn't want to be a Philly. He sat down that first day. He was like, I can't wait to bring a championship to Washington, D.C. is essentially what he said at his first press conference. Yeah, he named some whatever. He didn't want to be there. Garbage. I can't wait to see Scherzer strike him out.
I don't have a dog in this fight. I thought if I were Harper, what I would have done is I would have taken a short deal, like an opt-out deal with the Dodgers, done like a 2 or 3 year deal, then hit free agency again, and then, you know, done it that way. Because in the end, you got so much money, and LA is going to be good the next 2 years. After that, they might be garbage because they have so much money committed. But I'll tell you what, I think Philadelphia is not the place to be if you want to win. Right.
No, this was about guaranteed money, he's been very clear about that. That's all he wanted. Max out guaranteed money.
And he wanted to beat Machado's contract.
Yep, great.
And he did I can't believe I'm saying this. I actually like the Machado deal better for San Diego than I do the Harper deal for Philadelphia.
Why would you want to play on a sports team in Philadelphia?
Worst they will turn
fans
on you.
In the world.
They will turn on you. Garbage. They will boo you. Now, we say that, and the Boston, remember, the Red Sox fans booed David Ortiz that year he was bad. They booed David Ortiz. I'm just telling you, all sports fans are bad, except for Minnesota.
Philadelphia fans booed Santa Claus. They threw ice balls at Santa.
And Mike Schmidt. They booed Mike Schmidt at the end of his career.
Yeah, this is correct.
Mike Schmidt. Philadelphia. You might have heard of him. Hall of Famer. Anyway, Matt,
special.
Similar to that, Spencer Thurman on Facebook, and if you want to you give us questions on Facebook, you can do it at facebook.com/RiseAndShout, on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. When is the baseball preview, Spencer asks, and the answer is next week, question mark.
I like how your answer to his question is also a question.
So, Spencer, send us those questions for the baseball preview. We will commit to doing it next week.
We will commit to maybe thinking about your questions in a week's time.
All right. Thank you. Matt, let's go to the CougarFan.com, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. You are freaking loud.
Yeah,
it's so loud.
We're talking about this. When I do this on the road, I know I'm waking people up in adjacent hotel rooms.
It's fantastic.
It's great.
All right. So men's volleyball split with number 3 ranked UC Irvine. Anteaters, right? They're the Anteaters.
No, aren't they the banana peels?
The banana slugs. You're we do this every
they
time.
They are. They're the Anteaters. Yeah, their mascot is Peter the Anteater.
Yeah, I usually get that one wrong, but I think learned something. Well, like done. I learned it. That is a terrible mascot. They split with UC Irvine, so that's actually, I think, a pretty good result for the men's volleyball team. They have UCLA and Pepperdine coming to the Smithfield House tomorrow. We're recording this on Wednesday, and then again on Saturday.
Are they bringing Peter the Anteater to any of these games? That's what
I want to know. That happened last week.
Don't Google image search Peter the Anteater. Not safe for work.
Okay. All right. We'll keep that in mind. Matt, best news of the week. The BYU women's basketball team beat Gonzaga for what, the third time?
Oh, it was awesome.
And won the West Coast Conference Championship. And we wouldn't know this because BYU hasn't won a conference tournament in like a billion years on the men's side. But you know what you get when you win the conference tournament?
A trophy.
A trophy, that's true.
You get to cut down the nets.
You get to cut down nets.
I'm going to list everything I can think of except for the one thing that you're looking for.
Bid to the NCAA tournament is what the answer I was looking for. So you do not get the prize. But congrats to the women's basketball team. Matt, you said you watched some of this game. They looked really good. I didn't end up – I just saw highlights. What was your impressions of how the Cougars played?
The team looked really good, and I thought they did a really good job of keeping their foot on the gas pedal during the fourth quarter. Coming into the fourth quarter, it was, you look at the difference in points at the end of this game. The game felt a lot closer than that. And I thought that they did a very good job of controlling the ball, making sure they got buckets, defensive rebounds without giving up second chance shots, and maintaining composure. The game got very physical towards the end, but I thought that they did a really good job of playing through that. And not worrying about that, not letting that become distracting to what they're really trying to accomplish. And their ability to drive to the hoop, I mean, Gonzalez and the spin move, it's pretty good. And when you have somebody who becomes the tournament MVP and wasn't even selected for first team all conference,
that's pretty
cool, right? So really good team. And I think a couple weeks ago we had somebody send in a podcast question saying, what's the most interesting thing going on in BYU sports right now? And my answer was women's basketball.
You were
and
right.
That's clearly still the case. This is a team to watch going into the tournament. It's an exciting time for women's basketball right now.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully what doesn't happen, and this happens on occasion, is they win a I don't want to say unexpected, because they were the second seed and beat Gonzaga twice, right, mm-hmm. during the regular season. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anybody would have said, this is a shock seeing that they've already won even in Spokane. But sometimes, you haven't won that title. You win it, and that becomes your championship, and you lay an egg in the first round of the West Coast Conference Tournament. So hopefully Jeff Judkins and his team don't do that. And like you said, or at least kind of hinted at, I think there's a very good chance that they have that they pull together a long tournament run.
Well, and this is a team that clearly enjoys being around each other. I know that's a lot easier when you're winning games. But and they've got some really talented athletes on this team.
Yeah,
they've got Beasley really Johnson, who's a two-sport athlete, and like we mentioned before, was the MVP of the tournament. I mean, there's some good players on this team. I don't imagine that they're going to fall into the trap you're talking about and go out and lay an egg.
Oh, I don't think so either. I think they're not likely to do that, but it's always one of those traps, right, that you can if you're not careful. So anyway, we'll find out next weekend where they're seated and where they're going for the tournament. We'll talk more about men's basketball later in the show, even though we don't want to. Matt, I think that's it for Cougars in the News. So let's talk, actually, later in the show is now.
Oh, geez. We can't put it off any further?
Yeah, so BYU lays a massive egg, the men's team, in the West Coast Conference Tournament, losing their first game in the quarterfinals to San Diego, a team they had handled not so far in the past to get that third seed. Bad result, bad game, bad defense, bad offense. There was really nothing good about that game for BYU. Right? I mean, there's no silver linings to this one.
None. There's no moral victories. There's no yeah buts. There's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's jump into the tweet bag here.
Tweet bag. Second time.
Jeremy Ashton on email, and you want to email us, you can do it at risingshoutpod@gmail.com. Were you more disappointed with BYU's early exit from the WCC tournament, or the movie Captain Marvel. Neither of us has seen Captain Marvel.
Yeah, no spoilers here, guys.
So here's the thing. There is 0% chance I would be more disappointed in that movie than BYU's early exit.
Fact. Agreed.
Even if I'm slightly disappointed in it. I know there's been some folks that are disappointed in Captain Marvel. It appears that it won't be, you know, the best movie ever. But you and I will talk about it after we've both seen it.
Is it going to win Picture of the Year? Sounds like maybe not. But guys, these are superhero movies. Like, what are we looking for here?
Yeah, well, some people...
They're not all going to be Black Panther. They're not all going to be the first Iron Man.
No, they're not all going to be that good. So, anyway, we'll come back to that one. But this was highly disappointing. Matt, I'm not going to read all of Brian Taylor's...
Epistle
to us on Facebook.
Dissertation?
He's mad. And he has every right to
be. He's got some emotion.
He says, that game against USD was a disgrace to BYU Athletics. Can you disagree?
I can't disagree. I feel like it's a little dramatic. But it's not wrong.
He says he knows Rose is not going to be fired or resigned until his contract expires in 2021.
At least until then.
The resign piece, I have no idea. Because anytime somebody could, for personal reasons, decide, I want to leave. But yes, I think the likely scenario is he doesn't leave until after the 2021 season. His question is, what does BYU have in the pipeline for recruits? We're not going to go into detail on that one today, Brian. They have some in there. Any chance we can recruit outside of Utah County for once? You know, we used to, before the Big Three, the Lone Peak Three, or whatever you want to call them. Quite frankly, that was our bread and butter was outside of Utah County. So I think so. And do we have any players in coming years that can play Division I ball besides Baxter and Harding? The answer is yes, because everyone who will be on the team will technically be able to play Division I ball.
Yeah, anybody who makes the team.
But non-sarcasm aside, Brian, there are some good recruits coming. He says he's very pessimistic that basketball will ever be good again. I'm not referring to good as in the Jimmer years. I'm talking about making the NCAA tourney once every 3 years. Is that too much to ask with this program? With the facilities and resources we have, this shouldn't be unreachable at all. It shouldn't. I think that's, Brian, that's extremely reasonable. I think some fans are getting caught up in that we should be in the NCAA tournament every year, and I don't know if that's actually a realistic plateau for the program. I think what he describes, one every 3 years or two out of every four, is more realistic. I think this is, we've talked about this before, a run of terrible luck because of these guys that left early. This team makes the tournament if Mika and Elijah Bryan are on it.
Now, I would just characterize it slightly differently. I don't know that I would use the phrase a run of terrible luck. It's a series of choices that were made that led to these circumstances. I can't chalk this up to luck. I think at the time of the Lone Peak 3, which we all agree is really at the center of all of this.
Yes.
At the time of the Lone Peak 3, I don't know if I said this or I'm just pretending like I had this feeling now in retrospect.
I believe you're pretending, but go ahead and say it anyway.
Excellent. But if you look at that, I don't know of another time that a Division I basketball program has recruited basically the starting five from any high school that ever. Right?
Well, one of their starting five was on the football team.
Right, and then they bring the coach in.
Yeah.
So I don't know that anybody has done this, and I think there's a reason why. When you go to recruit, typically where you're going to pick, you're going to go after the places where you recruit from, and you try and grab the best player you can from here, the best player you can from here, and put them together to form a team. Just because this Lone Peak High School team was really good at the high school level, and these three guys together at the high school level were extremely competitive, does not mean when they get together and play against what it amounts to all-star teams, right, from other high schools where they've picked the best here and the best there, that they're going to be as competitive. We should have been able to see this coming, A.
Yeah, but what you described didn't happen. We weren't ever not competitive with the three of them on the court because we never had the three of them on the court.
Okay, true. But why do you go to – I just feel like we put all of our eggs in one basket and it fell apart.
I think that's true that we put all of our eggs in one basket. And I think, B, it did fall apart. I just don't disagree with the path you got to get – I don't disagree.
You do disagree.
I disagree with the path that you get.
So you don't not disagree.
I do not disagree.
Right.
I disagree.
Correct.
Correct. All right. We're as ridiculous together in person. Maybe
it's
more, actually.
It's a little bit worse.
So, and Please stop making eye contact with me.
It's awkward. I'm going to just look over here.
Just look at your computer screen as usual. What would have happened if any of those three players had ended up not at BYU?
I don't know that it makes any difference, to your point, because they weren't ever consistently on the floor at the same time anyway.
But at the time when they were all recruited, it would have been pandemonium among the fans.
Yes, total meltdown.
This reminds me of back when what's-his-face, Roger Reed, had his two sons.
Yep.
Okay? They were really good high school basketball players. And if they don't come to play for him, that's – how could you even not get your two sons to come play? And I'm sure he wanted them to come play and play for him. And then it ended up being a disaster at the end.
Yeah.
Because he had his sons taking terrible shots, and you're their dad – and Roger Reed was a really good coach and ended up coaching, being an assistant with Danny Ainge in the NBA. And he got railroaded out of town because, like you said, a series of choices were made that led to really bad consequences.
But see, here's the deal. Nobody's going to railroad him out of town if his sons go to play somewhere else. People are going to be upset, but he's not going to lose his job over that. And the same thing like with this situation with Rose. If he doesn't land the lone pick three, let's say one or two of them go somewhere else. Maybe one of them even goes to the University of Utah. If I even dare say it out loud.
Don't
the
say
university
it out
loud. Which shall not be mentioned.
That's gross.
To play for what's-his-face, Voldemort, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think people are upset for like 90 days. And then by the time that next season rolls around, people move on and they're over it.
No way. If Mika had gone to Utah and been as good at Utah as he was at BYU, it would have been a disaster every single time he had a big game. Twitter would have lit up that Rose failed and Mika ended up somewhere else. Now, I'm not going to say Emory because Emory hasn't had a good enough career. If you took his career and plopped it someplace else, it becomes unforgettable. Haas, maybe. This
becomes
year has been really good.
Becomes forgettable. There you go again with your – you said unforgettable.
Becomes unforgettable.
It becomes forgettable.
What is wrong with me today?
I don't know.
But Haas this year certainly has had a good enough year where the same thing could have potentially happened. So I disagree with you. These three were so on the radar for BYU fans in high school that it's not like other people that he recruited. I mean, look what happened with Burgess back in the day. He went to Duke. It was like a disaster. Then he ends up at the U, right? He didn't even have a good college career, and people were still – Cleveland screwed up. It was Cleveland at the time, right? With Burgess, if I'm remembering my history right. I just think he needed to land two of those three guys.
But all I'm saying is, if I'm Dave Rose and I have to pick the disaster scenario of I don't get all three of the Lone Peak three is my first scenario, or the dumpster fire that is the situation right now, I pick the flak from all three.
But how could he have anticipated that Eric Mika would leave 2 years early? 2 years to go play in Italy and then not – and is now on like some third-rate European team. Okay? Because that was a stupid decision by Mika in retrospect. And at the time, I hesitated to call it that because I really don't like getting in somebody else's business. It's his own personal call. But whoever advised him to do this, it was not the right thing for his basketball career. He should have stayed at school, gotten better – under coaching that actually cares because they recruited you, as opposed to, you know, coaching in Europe, where a lot of times these European coaches didn't even want the foreign guy. They didn't even want you on their team.
And your success, they could care less about your success.
Yes,
they're worried about their team.
They're worrying about their team's record, and you're no longer the best guy on the team anymore, right?
Right.
At BYU, Mika was the best guy. He would have gotten all the shots he wanted, would have gotten all the help he wanted. And if I'm advising Childs today, I give him the same advice. I know it wasn't a lot of fun to play this year, but guess what? Losing in Europe, you'll make some money. It won't be fun either, right? And you can do that a year from now, and nothing will change in Childs. Unlike Mika, he's younger than Mika was, so he doesn't have to worry as much about that. But anyway, I don't know. I feel like Rose couldn't have won on this one. But back to Brian's question, I think they will be that level again going forward. I don't think the program's a dumpster fire. I think we're in the middle of one. Season-wise, and that things will get better and they'll get back to where they were during most of Rose's tenure, besides
and,
the generation.
And on some level, this stuff is all cyclical anyway, right? I mean, even Alabama hasn't been good forever. Okay.
In football?
Okay, yeah.
No, they haven't.
Right?
No, they haven't.
But they've been good for a long time. But like this stuff is cyclical. I think to say that the state of the program is run so far into the ground at this point that we're never going to recover is probably a little bit too much.
Now, I skipped over part of his question about, you know, who becomes coach when Rhodes leaves, say in 2021. And he says Cummard, Lacombe, Lewis. Quite frankly, unless something changes in the next two seasons, I don't see anybody on this.
Nobody on this.
On this staff.
No, it's nobody on this staff.
I don't think you'd look at Lewis now and go, because a lot of people thought, you know, he's the heir apparent when they brought him in from Lone Peak, right? He's going to be the guy that replaces Rose long term, unless they really turn some things around. But right now, this is the defense has not been consistent, and the offense has lacked a good identity the last year and a half.
No, I feel like if you backed me into a corner today and told me I had to that I had to name somebody now, you know, I think Pope is somebody that's on the radar.
Yeah, could be Pope.
I'd love if Dave Rice had worked out a little bit differently after he left BYU to have him on the radar.
Well, he might still. I mean, here's the thing, right? There are some good college basketball coaches that had some rough parts to their careers, right? Not everybody is Roy Williams, right? That it's all, you know, roses. Roses? That was probably should have picked something else.
What you're talking about.
What do you mean you don't understand what I'm talking about?
All roses?
Roses, like easy, good.
Okay, sure.
All right, whatever. Your face is whatever.
I don't know what to do with what you just said.
So, you know, so maybe Rice could come back. I'm just saying I have no idea really who the next coach is going to be. And it could be somebody that we're not even thinking of because quite frankly, I remember when Steve Cleveland was named coach, I had no idea who the guy was and I thought it was going to be a disastrous hire and it worked out great. Right.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I saw there were several exchanges about this on Twitter and I wish I could remember who tweeted this and give them credit for it. But the idea basically was it's like any other job vacancy. If somebody's not working out, like you can them and then you go out to the market and you go find a guy.
Yep.
Right. Now, I understand that we've got some weird requirements at BYU. The big one here being that the guy's got to be a member of the church, but like you go find somebody. If this one's not working, you go find somebody. Now, I say that, but I am also the guy that every time people talk about firing a coach, I say, don't fire a guy until you kind of know what you're doing. But
well, but here's the thing, right? Even at a company, they succession plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
If at this point you believe, if you're Tom Homo and you believe that Dave Rose is going to retire in 2021.
Or that you might fire him in 2021.
Sure. Either of those scenarios. You need to start thinking about who that next coach is going to be. And hopefully they have, because I think at this point, I think it's likely that he's gone after that. But anyway.
I do know nobody has called me to see if I would be available.
That's good.
So I'm not on the list.
Which is really smart. Wade Hillam on Facebook asked, what was that? ! As competitors, how do they not get hyped for that game? Listen, Wade, I'm not trying to critique you here, your question, but I don't know what that means. They got outplayed and outcoached, right? That doesn't actually mean they weren't excited for the game, right? I don't know if they were or not. I have no idea. I don't put this on Rose, but I don't buy his excuse either of the format and the fact that San Diego played games before. Familiarity with an environment does not give you a 40-point advantage. It was their conference tournament, and they played it like it was a pickup game at the rec center.
I don't know. I've seen some pickup games at the rec center that get pretty testy.
Yeah, that was actually a little bit more intense than that. I think Rose's excuse is bogus, Matt. So I'll change the question to that. I think what Rose said was stupid.
The thing about the format? Listen,
the format's stupid. San Diego played the day before. They should be tired. You know, back-to-back days is tough, right? And that's bogus to me. And it's the same thing people are saying about Gonzaga losing to St. Mary's. Ha-ha, they got what they deserved because they wanted this format. They didn't get beat because of a format. They got beat by St. Mary's. And in this case, BYU got beat by San Diego. Not by a format, not by anything else. They got beat by San Diego.
Now, the format stinks. Don't get me wrong. I hate the format.
Yeah, I
hate the fact that basically Gonzaga's got to show up once to win the tournament, right?
I think the format,
I'm with you, the format's not the reason you lose this game. You don't lose this game because these guys, they had a warm-up the night before? You got to show up and play a basketball game. So I think it's lame to blame the format when clearly, like, your team just didn't perform.
Now, BYU has to back up Rose a little bit. BYU has struggled to shoot three-pointers in that stadium. Okay? And they really struggled against San Diego to shoot three-pointers. And having a day to get the sight lines and get used to it could be there. And the fact that they're staying at that stupid arena in Las Vegas is unfortunate, because I don't think it's a very good basketball arena.
I just think of every time I watch a WCC conference tournament, I remember the year that they had the logo at midcourt that was super slippery.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody...
Everyone kept biting.
And it got its own Twitter account during the game. Yeah, that was legendary.
Yeah, that was legendary.
That was a great
time.
That
was really good.
Great time.
But Wade, to your point, I don't buy his excuse. I don't know that I lay it all on Rose either. I think, you know, in football, I get criticized on the show a little bit for putting too much weight on the coaches and not enough on the players. In basketball, I feel the opposite, right? I feel like a basketball team, in-game coaching is way less important than it is in basketball and football. In football, in-game coaching, I think it's everything. I think coaches that make adjustments during the game, that's who the good coaches are. I think in basketball, it's who preps their team better. And then at the end, the guys have to play and play the right defenses. Not that there aren't, in both cases, important things that the players do in game and the important things that the coaches do in game. But I watching that game with San Diego, I kind of felt like the players just weren't making plays. There were open three-pointers. They missed them, right? The coach can't do anything about. There were defensive sequences where it just seemed like the guy was lost on the court. And is that a coaching issue? Perhaps. But at this point in the season, if you don't know where you're supposed to stand on a defense they've been running all year, I'm not exactly sure what the coach is supposed to do, besides maybe not play you. But man, it was bad. It was a bad game.
Yeah, it was strange, right? I mean, I felt like, you know, you talk about the things that a coach can do in game. Early in that game, it looked like it was going to get out of hand. Rose called a timeout and really laid into the guys, really laid into them. And then somebody posted a caption where he was holding up three fingers on both hands and yelling something. I was like, what is he saying here? I don't know.
Read between the lines, bro.
I don't know what he was saying there. But I do know that I didn't see much of a reaction from the players in that huddle.
And maybe that's what Wade's talking about.
Okay. And I do know that nothing changed in terms of their performance. So is it a hyped up issue, if I use air quotes there? Is it like what you were talking about where he said, hey, look, we've told you what we need to run here. You need to go out there and effectively do what it is that we talked about. I don't know which of those two things went on in that huddle, but clearly, I mean, it's not like Rose is trying to mail this stuff in, right? Everybody wants to pile on Rose. He's trying to mail this in. Do I think the players are trying to mail that in? No. I think those guys want to win. I think they want to win more than any of us want them to win. They just got beat. They got beat. They were soundly
They
beat.
Played
They were
poorly.
Outplayed, yeah. And the team was outcoached.
Yeah, they got beat, and it stinks. And
losing stinks.
Losing stinks. Well, following up on that, Kelly Rogers on Facebook had a question for us. Does BYU have the same pressure from fans that want sons and daughters to play ball that they are willing to bribe coaches and administrators like Stanford and Yale? Why did they pick Stanford and Yale? Are Stanford and Yale like getting...
Did you hear about this controversy? You're not aware of this? Actual controversy.
No, I've been traveling to Texas for heaven's sakes.
All right, hold up. Let me give you a little bit of background.
Okay.
Okay, you know Aunt Becky from Full House? The actress's name is Lori Loughlin. She's on like 100 Hallmark movies now.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. She hasn't been arrested by now. She's about to be arrested.
I might or might not have had a crush on her as a kid.
Who didn't? Okay, have mercy.
All right.
Uncle Jess.
Uncle Jess.
So Lori Loughlin, some actress whose name I can't remember right now. Anyway, I'm drawing a blank. And a bunch of other people and some college administrators have been indicted. Well, several were arrested. I think Lori is working a Hallmark movie in Canada right now, and they haven't caught up with her yet. So, anyway, the Mounties will find her.
The Mounties,
her.
Yeah. On
anyway,
horseback.
But essentially what happened is they were running a scam where people were buying their way into elite colleges and universities.
How was she involved?
She had a daughter. She was trying to get into USC. And USC was on the list of elite colleges and universities. I'm using air quotes.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other schools were Stanford, Yale, and a couple other places.
Those are elite.
Okay. So as part of this scheme, right, people were flat out paying for others to take their tests for them, and administrators at the schools knew about it and were accepting the scores. People were paying administrators off to just let people in. And in some cases, they would bribe coaches of kind of smaller sports to take a player and let them come in under like this, because you have a lot of schools that let an athlete in with kind of slightly different requirements. So they'll go and they'll be like, somebody's never rowed in their life, but all of a sudden they're on the crew team at Yale because the coach took a bribe to put them on the list don't have to fulfill all the same requirements.
And then they can just quit the crew team after season.
No, they're just on the roster and don't go to practice.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of these young people were like, oh, wow, I'm on the crew team, but I don't have to go to practice. So there's some argument about whether or not they actually understood what was going on when somebody else took the SAT for them. I think there's a hard case to make there. Anyway, but the question that he's asking is, and I think this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, is, is BYU, do we have the same pressure for people to get in there that somebody's going to start bribing Rose to put somebody on the roster? And is that what happened? Is that why our team sucks?
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
so
you,
now
Matt,
we come full circle back to the question. We went from Coach Rose to Aunt Becky, now back to Coach Rose.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that explanation. That's crazy. And I can tell you right now that there are people that would pay to get their kids into BYU that would bribe.
Oh, 100%.
That part may explain a couple of roster spots. I'm totally kidding. Totally kidding.
That whole thing's a disaster.
I don't believe that Lori Loughlin wants any of her kids to go to BYU. So I think we're probably safe.
Probably not.
Probably. Uncle Jesse, maybe. John Stamos, maybe. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Kelly says at the end of the question, when I watch past games, the players look like they're having fun, win or lose. Also, why are they not having fun? I have never watched anybody have fun and lose. I never lose and have fun in my entire life. I don't lose a board game and think, well, that was fun. I lose a board game and I'm ticked at the end. So I don't remember ever watching a BYU team that was having fun while losing. The winning piece is different. That's my take. Matt, what's your take?
So I'm with you. I believe that any team on any level can have fun. How about this? Might not have fun and still win or lose. But no losing team is enjoying themselves. And if they are, they shouldn't be. Right? So let's just, because that's, you play to win the games.
You play to win the games!
So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing there.
Like we are who we thought they were!
Oh, jeez. Okay, if a team doesn't get along or doesn't like each other or
playoffs,
isn't having fun, they're going to struggle.
Yeah, okay? For sure.
They might still be a winning team, right? A lot of guys who leave New England talk about how, they win, but who wants to play there? It's a blah, 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 blah. But then you look at a guy like Kyle Van Noy, he's like, I love it here.
Well, that's
because he just won
Detroit.
A couple of Super Bowls.
He played for Detroit, right? First. He saw what it can be like.
I agree, though, watching this team, especially in that last tournament game, they do not look like they're having fun. Now, is that a product of the fact that the team's not doing, that the team is underachieving? Is there something else going on there with a chemistry issue? Is there something else going on inside the program? Do people resent the Emory situation? Is there something personality-wise driven there? Is there an assistant coach or two that the players don't like? I have no idea. But I agree that the team does not appear to be having fun. But all of that being said, that could just be a product of losing.
Yes.
It's not necessarily the inverse where you don't have fun and that's what causes you to lose.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, I agree completely. Speaking of not having fun, Jashire Hartnett, in the least surprising news of the day, has decided to become a graduate transfer and leave BYU. Wish him well in the future. Hope he can find a better place for him. I don't believe that this is just like when we thought he might be leaving mid-year, I don't think this is a big blow to the program.
No, and if you didn't expect him to do this, you've been living under a rock.
Yeah, this was coming.
He decided to play out the season because Coach Rose sat him down and said, this is going to look a little bit better for you if you don't quit the team in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
And he thought about it and thought, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's way better for him this way.
Yep.
So that was smart.
And good luck to him.
Yeah, good luck to him.
And the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure Transfer.
I really liked him. His story's amazing, and he was fun to watch. I think everything is different if he's a supporting player instead of a player that was thrust into a role that I think was too big for him.
Yeah, timing on some of what happened to him is
just unfortunate. Unfortunate. Andre Hutchins on Twitter had this to say, that's @AC_Hutchins. I often hear the argument about how BYU's membership in the West Coast Conference is one of the main reasons of the decline in the men's basketball program over the years. How much credit do you give that? Sure doesn't seem to have hurt any of the women's sports. In many ways, it has bolstered them. Matt, do you think, and AC Andre gives us his own answer, by the way, which we'll read here in a second. But Matt, before we get to Andre's answer, what do you think about the argument that BYU's membership in the WCC has harmed the men's basketball program?
There's a lot of anecdotal, and I'll classify it as anecdotal evidence, that and maybe some statistical evidence, that is the case.
Okay. Tell me more.
Now I can't find it.
That's your problem. So I'll jump into something real fast while you're doing that. All right, Slick?
Hold on. I think I got it now. I think I'm just going to have to scroll down. Okay.
Okay, so, go ahead, buddy.
All right. So if I just look at the Dave Rose years, when Dave Rose coached and we were in the Mountain West Conference, okay, there are six seasons here to talk about.
Okay.
And this is what happens in those six seasons. You have an NIT first round, NCAA first round, NCAA first round, NCAA first round, NCAA second round, and an NCAA Sweet 16. So you have, in those six seasons, you have 5 NCAA appearances, and two of them you go at least two rounds deep. The very next year, okay, you get to the West Coast Conference, and now we have 7 seasons to talk about, because I'm not going to talk about 2018, 2019 yet, because we don't have all the numbers there. In those 7 seasons, you have only 3 NCAA tournament berths.
Okay.
And 4 NIT tournament berths, but you got a couple deep NIT runs.
Okay.
And then you can also get into some of the records and how many, you know, what do you have in terms of 20, you know, how many wins do you get? You don't have any 30 win seasons after you get to the West Coast Conference.
Okay.
And you've got the 2 seasons where all of your wins were vacated. So in those 2 seasons turn out to look pretty poorly if we all wave the magic wand and pretend like they don't exist. Anyway, that's a lot of rambling for me to say this. You could look at this and say, moving into the West Coast Conference changed this team, and they began performing differently on a national level after that. Now, is that a product of moving into the West Coast Conference? Is it the recruiting changed because you were in the West Coast Conference? I don't know. Are we getting different athletes than we would have gotten otherwise? I'm not convinced that that's actually true. But are we having a harder time putting together a resume that gets us into the NCAA tournament than we were putting together before? I think that's definitely true.
Okay. Let me deflate your argument completely.
Please.
So according to all the statistical packages today,
okay,
what's the better conference to be in, the West Coast Conference or the Mountain West?
Today?
Today. It's West Coast Conference. It's not even close. So, if you take Gonzaga out, they're about the same.
Okay, interesting.
Mountain West is a little bit better today than the West Coast Conference with Gonzaga removed. Okay, so I have a really hard time buying that your resume would be better, seeing that the Mountain West Conference is an absolute dumpster right now.
In 2010, it was not. No. And that's the comparison. But that's the comparison that I just ran and the people are making.
But you can't go back in time.
But that's the comparison everybody is making. Fine. They're like, hey, when we were in the Mountain West Conference in 2010, this is what it looked like.
Okay, but if you go to the Mountain West Conference today, all right, you have Nevada, you have Utah State. Both are very good teams. You have Fresno State, who's a pretty good team. And then you've got a bunch of mediocrity and terribleness after that.
But okay. What's interesting about
that
you just
sounds
said.
A lot like the West Coast Conference, except maybe Gonzaga's a little bit better than Gonzaga's better than Nevada and Utah State's better than St. Mary's, right? Okay, pick them, right? But in the end, it seems like it's a lot the same.
But you know what's interesting about that point is you take Gonzaga out of the West Coast Conference, what are you left with, right? But that's basically what happened in the Mountain West.
No, it isn't.
Utah and BYU left.
Oh, well, yeah, but let's go back to Utah's history. They hadn't been that great right before they left.
They'd had
some awesome runs throughout their time. But here's your other one. My favorite school, San Diego State.
Oh, you love the Aztecs.
The last 4 seasons, right, total arbitrary endpoint, similar to yours. No NCAA tournament. No NCAA tournament. Last year, under Brian Dutcher's first year as coach, They lost in the first round as the 11th seed. They're not making the NCAA tournament this year. It sounds a lot like us. But they were the big dogs when BYU was the big dogs. This stuff is cyclical. Unless you're Gonzaga or one of those programs that just reloads, everybody else has ups and downs.
But that's only been going on with Gonzaga. That hasn't been going on with Gonzaga forever either, guys.
No. But it's been going on for
a decade?
Quite a long time
15
now.
15 years?
Yeah. So it's been, you know, it's been a while, right? I mean, you look at Gonzaga. Let me see. I was going to pull
up their
seasons.
They had a big win in the tournament when they had that deep run in the late 90s.
They haven't missed the NCAA tournament since 1997-98.
Right.
Okay, so they are, but this is the exception. This is cyclical. Gonzaga is not a good measuring stick for us, right? They can go recruit whoever they want. And if, quite frankly, if I'm Gonzaga, I never leave the West Coast Conference.
No, why would you ever leave?
Look what happened to Butler. Is Butler better off now
that
they're in the Big East? They're not.
Don't leave. Be the big fish in the small pond.
Be the big fish in the small pond and go every year to the tournament.
And you will stay there forever.
Yeah. And they will go to the tournament this year, obviously. They may not be a one seed anymore after that kind of terrible loss. Okay, well, enough of that, Matt. Let's move on to some other stuff. So Andre, what he says, he doesn't give that argument any credence. There are two main reasons he thinks BYU is struggling. Poor coaches and players leaving early and transferring. Our conference membership isn't one of the biggest problems. I agree with Andre. Even if it is a problem, I don't think it's the driving problem. To your point, there might be some resume stuff. There might be some recruiting stuff. I don't like playing in these small high school gyms, but that's an aesthetic thing. It hasn't hurt Gonzaga. Maybe with seeds, you could argue in the past, but only if Gonzaga got into what? The Pac-12? Which they're never getting into. I mean, what conference could BYU be in that would be better than the West Coast from a resume building standpoint?
For basketball, yeah.
Basketball,
Pac-12's maybe not going to do it for you.
Mountain West. The Mountain West, because there's some programs in there that are historically better, right, than most of the West Coast conference. I mean, I'd rather be in the Mountain West for basketball. Still to this day, I would rather be that. So don't take it as that. I just don't think the Mountain West is that much better. You know, and that's your alternative, right?
I feel like the Mountain West would be more fun.
Again,
but that's a subjective.
It's a subjective thing, and there would be some cool things about being in the Mountain West. You don't play all of your games in California, and then one up in Washington
at gyms the size of the basketball, the cultural hall that your stick's in.
Yeah. And it truly, like our high school gym was the same size as University of San Francisco.
And we went to a tiny high school.
So it was a little weird to sit in that and be like, this is a college game, you know? Man, I played in a state tournament game that had probably had more people at our state tournament game my senior year than were at that USF game. So anyway, all right. Justin Sweeney has one for us.
Sweeney.
He says, I've always been a West Coast Conference. Mountain West Conference really aren't that different. Being Indian football and West Coast and the rest is better than the Mountain West for everything type of guy. That's a long preamble for a type of guy, Justin. But have you seen the WCC's new logo? It may be time to rethink all of this. Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag the 90s called and want their logo back. Yeah, it's not good.
It's a weird logo, but you know, the thing I read said that President Worthen had like a ton of input into the logo. Like it was his idea.
President who?
Kevin Worthen, president of BYU.
No.
That's the thing I read this morning.
No. What's Worthen getting involved in that?
He loved it.
Well, the 90s, he also loved the 90s. Maybe he's in a little Pearl Jam.
I don't know.
Right? Maybe he likes a little...
Foo Fighters.
Maybe he likes a little CNC Music Factory.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, that's right. You're about to start saying it. You're about to start saying it.
I thought about it, but I can't. Yeah, I'm not singing that on the show.
All right. Let's transition to football. Sweeney will make a later appearance in the show. Randy Whittle said this on Facebook. I would rather not discuss BYU basketball. So I was reading an article about former BYU quarterback John Walsh. I believe that was in the Daily Universe, right?
Oh, my gosh. This isn't getting any better.
And was surprised at how good his stats were. Ironically, I attended BYU during his years and had mostly forgotten about him. with wins against Notre Dame and South Bend and Oklahoma in the Copper Bowl and a narrow loss to Ohio State in another bowl game, I started to wonder why Walsh is kind of the forgotten QB. Statistically, he ranks among some of the elite QBs. Not a fact. We'll get to that in a second, Randy. In BYU history, but you rarely hear his name mentioned much among fans. Just curious about your thoughts on Mr. Walsh. I will start this. He is underrated. And he is forgotten. He was actually a decent QB. And quite frankly, right now, if you put him on the roster today, Senior Walsh would probably be the best quarterback we have on the roster.
Oh, he'd start.
He would start over Wilson today. Not.
You're not going to ask Walsh to run the ball.
You were not going to ask Walsh to run the ball. He was not a highly mobile quarterback.
Let's see. I believe that's a little bit of an understatement. I think there were a lot. I think there were nicknames associated with terms like cement blocks on his feet.
Now, I should say Junior John Walsh, because we never saw Senior John Walsh.
Senior John Walsh made the ill-advised decision to try and jump to the NFL.
Yes.
So Senior John Walsh wouldn't be on the roster.
That's right. That's right. See, and
he'd be playing in the Alliance of American Football.
The most important thing that John Walsh did for
actually,
this program.
Actually, he could start for the Stallions. He'd be better than the situation they're in right now, but I digress.
Yes. The best thing that John Walsh did for BYU football is he had a friend named Steve Sarkisian, who he said, you should, after I leave and go play in the NFL, you should come and play football at BYU. I believe that's true.
That's one of the greatest gifts anyone has ever given BYU football.
So Matt, what's your take before I'm going to jump back into some stats-related stuff on Walsh? What's your take on John Walsh?
You know, I think you're about to back this up with some statistics stuff, but John Walsh was a average to above-average quarterback. He was serviceable. He did have some great wins here. The reason he is forgotten is that we've had some really good quarterbacks come through this program, and he just doesn't match up.
Well, and he had a guy that came right after him who was
awesome,
really good, and he had a guy that came right before him who was won a Heisman.
Maybe one of the best college quarterbacks of all time.
So unfortunately for him,
he was sandwiched between two really good,
really good guys. You know, he is a better version of Federick, who also got forgotten, right? Federick was
who?
Kevin Federick.
Kevin
is his name.
Federick. This was a quarterback?
Yeah, he was a quarterback.
I'm just kidding. He was there while I was there.
Yeah. See what you
Federick
did there.
Federick was pretty good.
So I did this quarterback season rankings for the Deseret News a few years ago. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do.
So these rankings are dated in that they don't – their last season that's included in here is the 2015 Tanner Mangum season. So 16, 17, 18. So I've got 3 years not in there. I think we can say for certain that the 17 season would not affect these rankings of the top 20.
No, the 17 season is not going to make a top 20 quarterback performance.
Now, Wilson's last year might be top 25. Maybe not, though. Okay, and we'll get to that in a second. But Walsh had two top 25 seasons. I had his 1993 ranked 17th and his 94 ranked 24th of all time. In comparison, Detmer had three better seasons. Doman had a better season. Sarkisian had, to be fair, Sarkisian only had one better season.
Sarkisian had one extremely good year.
And the other one was not. Steve Young, of course, had a massively successful season and one that was not. Bosco had two better seasons than him. Is that right? Bosco had two better seasons. Yeah, and then McMahon had a couple better seasons than him. Walsh is not among the elite BYU quarterbacks statistically. He just isn't. Whether you're doing total yards, yards per attempt, QB rating, whatever else you want to do, Walsh was very, very good, but he was not elite.
He thought he was elite, which is why he left early.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate.
He got bad advice.
Him and Eric Mika talked to the same people?
Maybe they did.
Maybe they did. But that's a great question, Randy. Thank you for sharing about Mr. Walsh. And he is kind of a forgotten QB. And I think that's because of the two, like you said, Matt, he was sandwiched between two really good quarterbacks. So not great for him. Matt, speaking of quarterbacks, Lawless Republic put out their QB preview. We've talked about this already. I'm going to throw out a controversial statement.
Great.
All right.
Let's do that. Let's do controversial statements.
I do not believe the drop-off between Zach Wilson and his backups is very large. I believe Zach Wilson is the best quarterback of the three, Romney and Hall being the other two. But I don't believe it's a massive distance between them. I actually think we have some quarterback depth. Matt, your response, your rebuttal.
What's your proof for that?
I have no proof for
there it. There is no proof for that.
None.
So, yeah, that's a great thing to say, right? Except there is a little bit of proof. We've seen Critchlow.
I didn't mention Critchlow. Did you notice I didn't mention Critchlow?
Okay.
I think Wilson is heads and shoulders above Critchlow.
Okay. All right. So Wilson stacks up against the other guys whom you have never seen play quarterback. You feel like the drop-off isn't that large.
Romney was a similar recruit to Wilson as far as his film, his ratings on the agency.
So was Jake Heaps. So was...
So all you've got is Heaps. All you've got is Heaps.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry that we don't have a long history of, like, highly rated quarterbacks who came in here and, like, blew it.
Well, wait a second. Wilson wasn't a highly rated quarterback. He was a 3-star guy. He wasn't Heaps.
Okay.
None of these guys are Heaps.
Well, turns out Heaps wasn't Heaps.
No, but okay. I'm just saying, like, none of these guys is Hill or Heaps. They weren't elite quarterbacks in high school. They were very good high school quarterbacks. I mean, we've got one Conover who's going to go on a mission. He's the elite quarterback, right? When he gets back, these guys are all very good high school quarterbacks, really good athletes in Wilson and Hall, and I think Romney as well by reputation and film. You've got some good athletes. I just don't – what I'm really saying is this, like, everyone's freaking out because what if Wilson's shoulder doesn't heal? And that's a possibility. Well, I have no idea. I'm not a doctor. I don't even know what the procedure really was. But I'm not worried about it partially because there's a pretty good chance that Hall and Romney are as good, better, or a little bit worse. And then so it doesn't matter that much except the experience part. I get it. We'll get to the first couple games of the schedule here in a second with Sweeney's second question. But, Matt, I mean, you feel differently.
Well, the experience part I think is really the big deal. The bread and butter for BYU, and I don't know how many times I've said this, is to go get that 3-star guy and hope that he plays as something better than that or coach him into something bigger and better than that. And we know that Zach Wilson has an upside that is higher than what he was recruited at. We know that because we've seen it.
Yep, that's fair.
I cannot make that argument about anybody else on the roster because we haven't seen it. So I can't sit here and tell you that I'm confident that any of these other guys would come, well, you could trot them out there and they would perform on the same level as Wilson does. Because I know Wilson outplays his stars.
I don't know if he's outplayed them yet.
He will.
But again, you're making an assumption. We all thought Mangum was going to outplay his stars, and he did not.
Mangum did not play at the same level of the stars that he was recruited at.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I just said.
Just in the other direction.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying with Wilson. We think he will be better. He will progress. Heaps didn't progress. Mangum didn't progress. Hill did progress, right? Like,
yeah, but the difference is, I think we knew pretty. Well, I mean, I guess I can't say that. I was going to say we knew early on Heaps that he wasn't going to progress, but I think on Heaps we thought that he was.
No, here's the thing. Everybody thought Heaps played well his freshman year, except for like me and four other people who were like, really bad, mediocre year, below average. And everyone's like, oh, he had such a good freshman year, he never built on it.
Well, it's one of the greatest freshman years of all time.
Yeah,
except we've had like
third,
no freshman.
Yeah,
ever
we've
start.
Had third, three freshman starting quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've got a known commodity in Wilson, and I don't know what I have after that. So.
Well, that's fair, but you're wrong. All right. Speaking of recruiting, BYU has 8 4-star recruits offered in their 2020 class, including a wide receiver, a running back. We could use him now. Can he graduate early?
Yeah, can we get that in like this year?
Yeah, we could. A couple wide receivers, offensive tackle, and that's Andrew Gentry, who's probably likely to end up at BYU at least. At least he's got some good connections here, but he does have offers from Michigan, Notre Dame, and Alabama. That would be, yeah. But they do have his older brothers already at BYU. Anyway, it's dreaming, right? That they are not going to get all 8 of these guys, right? But how many of them do they need to get for it to be like a groundbreaking class? 4 of these guys? 3?
I think 3 would be groundbreaking.
I think 3 would be
but
pretty amazing.
A couple of these guys are such long shots that like it's just not going to happen, right? But yeah, if you could get 3 of these guys, that would be unbelievable if we got 3 of these guys.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it would be amazing. Some of these guys have connections to BYU. For example, they offered Clark Phillips III. He's not even, I think, considering BYU anymore, according to multiple recruiting services. So, I mean, it really comes down to if you could get three of these guys, you know, it would be amazing. It would be amazing.
Like half of the guys on this list we are not in the running for. We're really only in the running for three or four of these guys.
Yes, and we'll probably only get one or two of them.
If we got two of them, I would still be pretty excited.
Yeah, that would be pretty exciting. So anyway, a little bit of early 2020 talk. Justin Sweeney says this, Matt, about football. I know this is probably hyperbole at this point, but I think it's true. The Utah game, speaking of next year's opening football game, is the biggest game of the year.
The biggest game of the year.
If we lose, we could become deflated and be staring 0-4 in the face.
That sounds gross.
Let's not stare anything in the face.
That sounds
really
gross.
Let's not stare things in the face. Especially, I've been staring at you in the face.
Socially awkward, actually.
All show, and it's really weird. Honestly, after the wheels come off at 0-4, 0-7 isn't far-fetched. Hashtag TweetBank. Are you trying to make everybody depressed, Justin?
This is terrible, Justin. Hey, look, like...
Okay, here's the thing. 0-4 is a very real possibility, depending on how good we are. Like the defense losing your two best defensive players, how well do you recover? What's Wilson's health situation? All those things, right? And how good these teams are, right? We've joked about Tennessee. Maybe they're really good this year, right?
Come on.
Okay, well, 0-7 is not a possibility. It's just not. We're not going 0-7. It is far-fetched, Justin. If you go 0-4, 0-7 is still far-fetched. It's still far-fetched. That would be way... Is it possible? Yes, but is certainly far-fetched. Matt, do you disagree? Or do you think Sweeney's right that if you start 0-4, those Toledo, USF, and Boise State games are all fairly losable?
Listen, I don't think that if you lose those four games... And then you lose something in those next three. I don't think you lose the Toledo, South Florida, or Boise State game because you lost the first four. I don't think that losing to Utah and then Tennessee, USC, and Washington becomes so deflating that the team just throws their hands up and they lay an egg against Toledo. But if they come out 0-4, that might tell us that the team is just not good enough to beat Toledo. That could be the case.
And Toledo may be good next year. I have no idea, right?
But coming out and losing to Utah puts you in a position that you then go out and lose to what might be a mediocre or below average Tennessee team. Let's just say that for now because it's fun to toy with Tennessee a little bit because it gets under Don's skin. But let's just say Tennessee's not very good. The fact that you win or lose against Utah should not have that much of an impact over those next two or three games. You're going to win or lose those first four games because you are better or not as good as the team you're up against.
Yes.
At the end of the day. Is there some hangover effect after when you lose three or four games like that in a row? Maybe.
I don't believe in that. I think physically there could be because you may be beat up because you're playing really good teams. And you may have injured players because you're playing really good teams with physical players on the other side. Right.
But I do think there is something to be said for, like, when a team starts to lose, it can become a little bit of an epidemic, right? They're like, oh, sure. You lose some confidence, we're not very good, none of this is working. People start, you have some locker room issues, stuff with the coaches, some of that can happen. But at the end of the day, you should, if you're better than Toledo, you're going to win that game. And you can be worse than Utah and better than Toledo.
Yes. Last year, Toledo was... I was trying to look this up. Tennessee was actually worse than BYU last year.
And I have no idea what they look like in the fall. I don't know what Tennessee's got coming back or whatever.
Toledo was 7-6 in the MAC, ranked by the Massey ratings 83rd in the country. They weren't very good last year. Now, again, don't know what there will be like this next year. USC, of course, on the schedule, they weren't better than us last year. They were 5-7. Mm-hmm. I get that if we get to 0-4, there's a possibility that BYU isn't just good and therefore you could go 0-7. I don't think that's realistic. I think it is far-fetched.
I just think it's if you go 0-4 in September, can you imagine losing to Utah, USC, and Washington all at home? Like that will not be fun.
I will tell you this. If Kalani Sitake opens up 0-7, he will not finish the year, or he finishes the year and they fire him.
That I agree with that.
I don't think.
You know what? I don't know.
Are we willing as a program to settle for mediocre football? Like, is the university?
That's not mediocre. That's terrible. Right, you're 0-7.
If guys aren't getting in trouble,
no, they'll fire him.
I hope so.
Oh yeah.
If you go 0-7, I would hope
two losing seasons out of three, and your best season was when you were cooking with somebody else's groceries. This is going to be the first year where he's got a lot of his own people on the field. The last year that happened more than probably he wanted because of how many freshmen that he ended up playing. But you've got a lot of your own guys, and you still can't win. And your recruiting classes have been, as we talked about before, not better than Mendenhall's.
Yeah. And I don't know. You wake up in November and you haven't won a game yet. Like, it's time.
I think it's far-fetched. Yeah. I think BYU wins two of those first four games. I don't know which ones yet, but I think they're 2-2 or 1-3 coming out of those games. Okay. I don't think they're 0-4.
Okay.
So, I think we're overrating Tennessee and USC because of the brand name values, right? The Tennessee game's on the road though, in a tough environment, so that one may not matter if they're better than us or not.
Yeah, but I mean, how good can Tennessee be? Their entire team is just volunteers.
That's right. That's right. Well done. That was actually really lame. Okay, so Matt, that's all we got for this week. All
right.
In person. That's all we got.
Okay.
Matt, next week we're going to do our MLB preview. We will talk about the men's basketball team being in the CIT or something.
Will they go? If they get selected for CBI, is that a tournament?
I don't remember.
Or is that a medical test?
I'm going to seem like I'm disagreeing with myself here, but it's possible. In bowls, I say you should always go. I say in basketball, if you don't get in the NIT, you pass and move on.
Especially, like, what's driving that, right? Like, if there's something going on, maybe players are banged up or whatever, just call it.
Just call it. You know, I could see Rose saying, though, no, I'd like some more practice time with these guys. We've got, you know, maybe Childs doesn't come back, but we got a lot of people coming back.
Yeah, but do we really even want to watch that?
Oh, I don't want to watch it.
I'm a bad person.
Are you going to... Is that even on TV?
I don't know. I'd probably stream it over the internet.
Yeah, probably nowadays you can do that. But anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We will be back next week. Another thing to keep your eye out for is that my book, Pete Crosser, is on sale for 99 cents for about another week. So check that out at your favorite e-retailer. Or you can get a physical copy of the book at both BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com. Maybe you've heard of Amazon. They sell lots of stuff.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. And you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/riseandshout. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!